This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Gary Adams, President and CEO of the National Cotton Council. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with the Cotton Council's Gary Adams next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 540 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Cotton farmers are no strangers to cyclical swings in prices for their product. But Gary Adams, President and CEO of the National Cotton Council, says the profit pendulum has swung deeply into the red, net returns of 12 to 15 cents under the cost of production. Adams says consumption is down and inflation isn't helping.
You know, inflation at the consumer level is really starting to make them reevaluate their purchase decisions. A lot of times apparel can be more of a discretionary purchase, and we're seeing them, you know, be more cautious there in that spending. I think we're also continuing to see strong competition from polyester. China's the largest producer of synthetic fiber. Polyester's in the 50 cent range when you look at what comes out of China. So that's another factor that comes into play. So yes, demand is one of the things that's struggling at the same time that we're seeing international production, particularly from our two largest exporting countries that are competitors of the U.S., Brazil and Australia. We're seeing that increase. Brazil's going to be a record level of production, probably somewhere above 16 million bales. For this crop that's currently being harvested. And that's been an upward trend for the last several years and likely to continue. And then the other factor is that Australia has bounced back to be about a 5 million bale crop. And they largely depend on, you know, the amount of irrigation water they have. They have some water now. More supply is coming to the market. Demand is still struggling.
What about quality of our crop compared to that of Brazil or Australia?
You know, and that is one of the things that we do want to, I think, highlight within U.S. industry and some of the new genetics that have come to the market even over, say, the past decade. We've seen improvements in the quality characteristics of the U.S. crop. If you look at the longer-term history, the crop is a longer, stronger fiber now than it was. So that is improving. You know, Australia, when you just look at the country as a whole, still kind of sets the bar in terms of high quality. Now, having said that, some of our Western production out of California in the San Joaquin Valley will be on par with Australia. I would say overall our quality is still a bit above where Brazil is, but they're also making improvements. So it hasn't been so much a quality issue. It is a case that we had a lot of producers who suffered in a drought in 2023, so we're hoping they'll swing back on production a little bit in the U.S. this year, which is greatly needed. You know, from a quality perspective, I think we're holding our own and even continuing to improve. It's just the fact that we need more market share on the demand side than what we're getting right now.
The other side is economics. The U.S. economy, nothing to brag about here, but compared to other economies, our dollar is still stronger, and that favors imports. So do we find that the strength of the U.S. currency is making it easier to import supplies as opposed to purchasing domestic?
The strength of the dollar does influence that. And really, we don't bring in the raw fiber into the United States. What we bring in are the finished textile goods. And if you look at where those come from, a lot of those may come in through trade agreements that we have in this hemisphere. So we talk about CAFTA DR and USMCA. A lot of that is U.S. cotton content that's gone into those countries for further processing. But when you look at the dynamics of imports that we're seeing now that's really different from where we were 4 to 5 years ago is the fact, yes, we continue to see imports come in, but a lot of those imports are coming in under what we refer to as a de minimis provision. And when I say that, de minimis has been a provision that's been in law in the United States for decades. And basically, in about 2016, a change was made that any product coming in with a value of less than $800 is not assessed a tariff, nor is it really any subject to the inspections that would go on when we think about things such as Forced Labor Prevention Act that's in place. So we have had a tremendous increase in the amount of textile products that come in under de minimis, and that also then puts even greater pressure on our domestic textile industry. I think one of the other facets of that is that a lot of times those textile products that are coming in de minimis may tend to lean more heavily toward man-made fiber than they are cotton. So our concern is we're losing some market share there as well.
Does a sustainably minded consumer trend move toward cotton?
But I do think we've got a real opportunity with, say, a sustainably minded consumer, as you put it, in terms of making them understand the natural fiber that is cotton. And the fact also, when we look at how cotton production has improved over the years, our environmental footprint has shrunk considerably. In other words, our growers today are much more efficient with their use of inputs, getting more pound of production per input that's used. We have got to continue to build that message into the consumer mindset so that they do look at natural fibers, and when they think about natural fibers, they think about cotton. I think the awareness that's not there enough with consumers, and we're continuing to try to amplify this message, is think about polyester products that are on the shelf. Those are a byproduct of the refining process for crude oil, so they're essentially a petroleum-based product. They're also basically a plastic, or a variation thereof. Polyester fibers are essentially a plastic. And so a lot of focus now on plastic pollution, that we're seeing a lot of focus on microplastics. Well, the microfibers that come off of synthetic products like a polyester shirt do not biodegrade in the same way natural fibers are. So it's more and more we're seeing those microplastics, microfibers show up in the environment. They're showing up in the food we eat. They're showing up in the air we breathe. And that's something we need consumers to continue to realize, that if you want the sustainable choice and the environmentally friendly choice, then cotton is the way to go there. And that's a message we have continued to focus on. But it's a struggle sometimes to change that consumer mindset, because at the end of the day, they may want to buy that responsibly produced and sustainable fiber, but also price still plays a large role in their purchasing decisions.
Gary, if we look at acreage this year, cotton acres are up, as I understand, which is probably not helping the price situation. And if the producer is in red ink, then the other side of the question is, what about the industry? How does the industry survive if the producer is challenged?
And the producer is challenged, and you think about that. Well, if the economics are so difficult, why did producers plant more cotton? And I think a couple of things to look at. Cotton was probably the least ugly of some of the options that they were looking at, in terms of, none of the options look good. And I would say the other thing too is producers are kind of caught where in that position where they may be covering their variable operating and only a portion of their fixed expenses. So they're kind of in that position where, okay, I've still got fixed debt to service, so I need to continue to produce. But they're not going to be able to do that forever, and I think this year was a real challenge for a lot of them to be able to get their production financing that they needed to get the 2024 crop in. If USDA's forecasts are correct that production costs are going to stay high for the 2025 crop, then I think where the real pinch point first comes is that when growers go to their lenders, they're not going to be able to secure that production financing and be able to plant that crop in 2025. And at that point, then we really start to have the ripple effect on the infrastructure that depends on those bales coming to market. And that, our concern is, a lot of growers had to get really creative this year to get the financing they needed to plant the crop. Creativity, I think, is run out as we look, if we don't see some change in terms of where things are in 2025.
Gary, crops like corn and soy, canola, other rapeseed have an opportunity with renewable fuel and maybe even sustainable aviation fuel if the rules are written in such a manner. Does the cotton market have alternative sources for revenue?
Well, I think there's a little bit of both in terms of opportunities and challenges, because one of the things to keep in mind is when we harvest an acre of cotton, you not only get the lint, that we focused on, the fiber that goes into the apparel products and the textile products, but it is also an oil seed. So in the ginning process, those fibers are separated from the cotton seed, and that is either used as a fed as whole seed in dairy and some cattle rations, but it's also crushed into oil seed. So one of the things we're just continuing to try to explore is what are the opportunities there when you have a vegetable oil that is coming out of the processing of the cotton seed, and is that going to be potentially an opportunity? I think one of the other ones that growers are looking at is what are some of the chances that they have going forward when they look at carbon markets, for example. And that's just really kind of a still an evolving space, but that may be another way to perhaps explore a revenue stream for growers if they can get some benefit there as well.
So let's talk Washington for a moment. On one side of the coin, recently we have heard that House Ag Chair Glenn G.T. Thompson still trying to put a farm bill together, and maybe during the lame duck session. On the opposite side, Senator Roger Marshall has said better to just approve an extension and punt writing new policy into next year. From the cotton perspective, what's your message to Washington?
Our message to Washington has been, one, we need to get a farm bill done this year. That is, you know, given the pressures that are there, you know, we don't know how the elections are going to come out. We don't necessarily know that things get easier next year, particularly when you look at there's still discussions that have to occur to address the debt ceiling. Taxes are going to be front and center when we get into 2025. So a lot of unknowns. And also when we look at the package that Chairman Thompson came out of the House Agriculture Committee with, it effectively addressed the priorities that the cotton industry had. It made a meaningful increase in the reference price, will provide a solid safety net in this current environment. And that's the kind of farm bill we need to see at the end of the day. So again, our message is, support is needed now more than ever. And that's why we're continuing to encourage the agriculture committees to do what they can to try to get it done this year. And we understand lame duck is probably the time or the window, if you're talking about in calendar 24, to get it done. But also, it's got to be a lot of background discussions going on between the four corners to get us ready to take advantage of that window after the election.
Is another extension of the 2018 Farm Bill adequate to get you by another year and provide what your producers need?
No, is the simple answer to that question. Another extension is not what the industry needs. And that's a message we've been given as well, is yes, you know, we've had the one extension, but we can't continue to do that, because if that's the case, then, you know, we're talking about any potential improvements in the safety net taking effect with the 2026 crop. And then if that's the case, with the timing of payments that would come about from, say, a better reference price that applies to 2026, those would come in October of 2027. And so if we go to we go back to our producer community now and say, you know what, it's going to be a one-year extension, and the next best opportunity for that increased support is 3 years down the road of when it will show up in your account. No. I mean, our producers would not survive to get to that point.
So then, in a parallel question, what are the consequences if the best Congress can do is an extension of the 2018?
I think the consequences of that, at least as we look within the lens of the producers we're talking to across the Cotton Belt, is that, I mean, it sets up what I would simply say are devastating economic circumstances as we go into the 2025 planting season, and those growers are going to their bankers with, if all they're having to show to their banker is this is the safety net we have is the 2018 Farm Bill, then I don't think it's overstating things to say that sets up a devastating situation for a lot of our growers. And I'm afraid they leave that meeting with their lender not having the financing they need.
A number of agriculture leaders in Washington and some farmers have raised eyebrows about using tariffs over trade deals. And tariffs are mentioned by President Biden, and tariffs are certainly mentioned by the Trump campaign. How does the cotton council feel about the use of tariffs to try to balance the throes of trade around the globe?
Well, that's a great question, and one that I'm not sure we even have the chance to fully unpack. But I'll kind of jump into it a little bit, because we've seen the impacts of tariffs that have been done in the past. And I think we saw, you know, in 2018 when we first got into a situation with China with some of those tariffs being put in place, and then China also responded with higher tariffs. We immediately saw a loss in market share of the raw fiber that we're moving into, that's moving into the export market. And as a result, there was assistance provided in the way of MFP. So I think that's something we have to be mindful of, is that our raw fiber is very export oriented. And so if there are tariffs, then is there going to be a retaliation that closes off some of the markets for our fiber moving out? Now, on the flip side, it's a complicated question. We talk about the cotton industry because we're going from the raw fiber all the way through representing textile manufacturers. And we know the damage that has been done to our textile industry because of the imports that are coming in. And certainly tariffs there, if they are higher tariffs are applied, it does provide some protection for our domestic manufacturers. So I think, you know, unfortunately, it's probably not a blanket response to give that addresses all the segments of our industry. It's one we really have to sit down and look at and say, okay, well, how exactly are those going to be applied? Where are they going to be applied, and how much are they? And to try to get at that. But it's something we're obviously beginning to look at more and more internally, just given the amount of talk that's out there, again, whether by either of the candidates.
I had a similar question with Senator Grassley, the two of us speaking together. I asked about tariffs, and he said certainly not in favor of tariffs, but he said that if tariffs are used, you should count on retaliation. And that's all the more reason to have a farm bill safety net in place to help producers through however consequences of tariffs might be.
You know, there's some logic there as well. You're right, because if we do those tariffs and there is retaliation and we see negative market impacts, it just further exacerbates the economic situation for our producers. And in this current safety net, you know, I think we've already kind of covered that. That's not going to be adequate. And so you're right. Needing the safety net of a better farm bill is going to be critical.
Gary, I would be interested in your thoughts on the Supreme Court's decision on the Chevron case. Are we actually better off? Is the Congress or are the courts capable of dotting I's and crossing T's for the specifics of what legislation may have intended?
That's a great question. I mean, we've seen the good and bad of both of those, honestly. We have seen regulators go well beyond where legislation intended it to go. And in some cases, I think, frankly, be contrary of where legislation was intending. But at the same time, it is a real challenge to get legislation to the level of detail necessary to fully address all the situations that come up. So to me, there's got to be some balance there that has a checks and balance in it. You know, I will say that our regulatory environment right now is one of the biggest challenges we have for cotton producers, and I think ag producers in general, of trying to get, you know, the access to the technology and the access to the products that are needed. So the regulatory environment we've created is one of the biggest hurdles we have for being competitive on a global marketplace.
I've spoken to a number of producers who suggest that their sustainability practices are tied to the technology that is available. They go hand in glove. And certainly that has been a point of contention for producers, of not knowing what products they have to use in a particular year, much less what technology might be approved down the line.
That's very true. And particularly, you know, there's always, when you lose a product, and I think about, you know, the current situation we're going through with dicamba right now, when we lose a product or have limited access to a product, then producers are looking at the alternatives and sometimes having to revert back to alternatives, say like additional plowing, which has its own impacts on the environment with soil loss and increased erosion. So all of those factors come into play, and I do think it has been technology adoption that has allowed us to be, allow producers to be more efficient with the resources, and it has brought about yield gains historically that have improved a producer's bottom line, and again, made them more efficient with their land. And as I look at some of the yield trends in cotton, we're seeing those plateau a little bit. So that's also a concern that we're not keeping up with the yield growth that we need, particularly when cost of production are increasing the way they are.
Some of the critics of the farm bill that was approved out of the House Ag Committee said it seemed to favor producers out of the South. Do you think the House Farm Bill was loaded to the South?
No, I don't. I think if you look at, you know, and we've tried to look at some comparisons of where is that reference price set relative to cost of production. And I think when you look at those types of comparisons of what the out of, you know, the production cost per acre are relative to a reference price, I think there's a lot of balance there. And we saw, you know, we saw increases across the board, in terms of reference prices. So, you know, we felt like they did a great job hitting a balance. And so now I think it is a balanced program that tried to address the major issues and challenges in agriculture right now.
Well, Gary Adams, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. Gary, you've been here before. It is Open Mic, and today you've got the last word.
Well, I think one of the things that we're focused on, obviously, with the Indian industry, too, is we've talked a lot about the market situation. We've talked a lot about the policy side. You know, I think we're also continuing to watch as this growing season progresses. We're seeing overall more favorable weather across the Cotton Belt, a little more moisture in some of those critical areas that have suffered through a couple of years of drought. So hopefully as we continue to progress, that we see a larger crop come to the market, provide particularly some bales for those producers and the infrastructure that relies on those bales, some relief after what's been a very difficult couple of years in 22 and 23. So I think that's another factor that's going to come into play as we go through the rest of this year.
Our thanks to Gary Adams, President and CEO of the National Cotton Council, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.